Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise, and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
When friends and family come to town, lend them your compass.
Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. I apologize for what happened Friday night. We had a not atypical glitch in our system here, and as a result, you all had to listen, for those of you who stuck around, to a rebroadcast of the Malloy Show. That was not on the agenda. And I do apologize. As a matter of fact, we were just so looking forward to being on the air when Saddam Hussein was executed. So we are going to try to pick up where we left off Friday. We also had a guest scheduled that night, Jackson County Community Service Coalition Executive Director Jim Yancey. He'll be here next hour to discuss what's been happening, as Bush puts it, in that part of the world since Katrina. We also want to welcome back to the fold WINZ AM 940 in Miami, who I believe is picking up the program tonight. All right, thank you. Good to have you folks back in Miami. One station at a time is how we're going to do it, right, Kathy? And happy Ford Day, Truth Seekers. The pomp and circumstance at a state funeral always impresses me. It really does. It is very moving, and Betty Ford is nothing if not a class act, and I don't mean act in a pejorative sense. She is a very classy woman, in my opinion. The truth about Gerald Ford is out there, if you care to find out about it. I got an email here from Carol. She said, "Did you wear black today to mourn Gerald Ford, who healed the country during that traumatic time by pardoning Richard Nixon? He was a Norman Rockwell painting come to life. It cost him the election, but it was a decent thing to do. It kind of made me sick, especially seeing that ultimate war criminal, Henry Kissinger, giving a eulogy today. Kind of made me wish that we had done to Kissinger what they did to Saddam Hussein, for Chile, East Timor, Vietnam, Cambodia, and on and on." Yeah, the execution of Saddam Hussein and the aftermath, the prelude and the postscript and the event itself was just astonishing. I'm stunned. I mean, I really am still, 4 days later. It's just incredible the way this was handled by the fake government of Iraq and by President Chucklenuts in this country and the media. It's just astonishing. I honestly don't have any idea where we live anymore. you know, it took years to try and execute the war criminals from Japan and Germany after World War II. And Saddam Hussein, once he was convicted, how long did it take? A couple of weeks. And the gleefulness, not that I mourn his passing as a dictator, a murderer. He certainly, I mean, the people who know him best are the people in Iraq. And they seemed, for the most part, extremely happy that he stepped off this mortal coil. But the lip-smacking, hand-rubbing gleefulness of American authorities who set him up, who put him in office, who maintained him in office, who provided him with his weapons, and who finally murdered or allowed him to be murdered after he had murdered so many at the with the permission of U.S. and U.K. forces, especially U.S., the CIA. Saddam Hussein never would have been in power had it not been for the CIA, as is the case in so many, so many countries. Saddam Hussein should have been literally turned over to his own people 10, 15 years ago, but he was not. And what we saw, and we have literally seen it, was the execution of somebody who was no longer indispensable to the U.S. where it concerns Middle Eastern foreign policy. It turns my stomach. It makes me nauseous. We have our annual tribute to Chuckle Nuts, the best of W 2006, coming up in a few minutes. Buckle up. You want a Raisin Brain retrospective? We have astonishing, it just seems like it goes on forever. Kathy and I talked about this before the show, but it is nothing but Bush in his own words. You may consider it to be overkill, but what I want you to do, if you want to play along, we're going to do this here in the first hour and in the third hour, at the bottom of the hour when we come back from the break. Just sit back and listen. It just seems to go on forever. It doesn't. But when you listen to what this moron has had to say, and you can provide the context. We do not take the time here to provide the context. You'll know when he's talking about the aftermath of Katrina. You'll know when he's talking about his murderous policies in the United States and in Iraq, Afghanistan, his failed foreign policies, his failed domestic policies. You'll understand the context when you hear him rip along. It's pretty grim. A hanging may cause one or more of the following medical conditions. It can close the carotid arteries. It can close the jugular veins, causing cerebral hypoxia. It can induce a carotid reflex, which reduces heartbeat when the pressure in the carotid arteries is high, causing cardiac arrest. It can break the neck, medically a cervical fracture. It can cause traumatic spinal cord injury. It can close the airways, causing cerebral ischemia. You can lose your head. The cause of death in hanging depends on the condition related to the event. When the body is released from a relatively high position, death is usually caused by severing the spinal cord between cervical vertebrae 1 and 2, which may be functional decapitation. High cervical fracture frequently occurs in judicial hangings, in fact, and the C1, C2 fracture has been called the hangman's fracture in medicine, even when it occurs in other circumstances. Accidental C1, C2 fracture victims, in fact, do not generally report unconsciousness as immediate result. Instead, this comes after some minutes, unconsciousness does, from asphyxia. Now, in the absence of fracture and dislocation, occlusion of blood vessels becomes a major cause of death. Obstruction of venous drainage of the brain via occlusion of the internal jugular veins leads to cerebral edema and then to cerebral ischemia. Other processes that have been suggested to contribute are vagal collapse, and compromise of the cerebral blood flow by obstruction of the carotid arteries, even though their obstruction requires far more force than the obstruction of jugular veins, since they're seated deeper and they contain blood in much higher pressure compared to the jugular veins. Where death has been caused by blocking the veins, the face will typically have become engorged and cyanotic, turning blue, of course. There will be a classic sign of strangulation, little blood marks on the face, which I believe is called petechia, and in the eyes, from burst blood capillaries. The tongue may protrude. Where death has occurred through carotid artery obstruction or cervical fracture, the face will typically be pale in color and not show the petechia. There exist many reports and pictures of actual short drop hangings, which seem to show that the person died quickly and fairly peacefully, while others indicate a slow and agonizing death by strangulation. Now, when cerebral circulation is severely compromised by any mechanism, arterial or venous, death occurs over 4 or more minutes from cerebral hypoxia, although the heart may continue to beat for some period after the brain is no longer resuscitatable. When death occurs in such a case is a matter of convention. In judicial hangings, death is pronounced at cardiac arrest, which may occur at times from 7 minutes to 15 minutes or longer after the actual hanging. While the prisoner is suspended, and once the prisoner has lapsed into unconsciousness, rippling movements of the body and limbs may occur for some time, which are usually attributed to nervous and muscular reflexes. In Britain, it was normal to leave the body suspended for an hour to ensure death. And there's a popular myth about sexual stimulation of hanged men due to the apparent erection some exhibited. The effect is attributed to gravity causing the blood to settle in the legs and lower torso, thereby engorging the penis. And after death, the body typically shows marks of suspension, you know, bruising and rope marks on the neck. Also, there have been cases of autoerotic asphyxiation when people try to do this by themselves, leading to death. And children have accidentally died playing what is called the choking game.
Gun him down as I walk by a dim cafe and I look through the door. I saw my Flo with her new love and I couldn't. No more.
The Iraqi regime is a threat of unique urgency. It has developed weapons of mass death.
You have probably seen the images that are available now all over the internet of Saddam's hanging. Somebody sent me this. I don't know where it's from. Saddam Hussein never bowed his head until his neck snapped. His last words were equally defiant. He said, "Down with the traitors, the Americans, the spies, and the Persians." His reference there for Iranians. His executioners wore black ski masks. Mr. Hussein could still see their deep brown skin and hear their dialects, distinct to the Shiite southern part of the country where he had so brutally repressed two separate uprisings. The executioners took his hat and his scarf. Hussein, whose hands were bound in front of him, was taken to the judge's room next door. He followed each order he was given. He sat down, and the verdict finding him guilty of crimes against humanity was read aloud. Hussein shouted, "Long live the nation, long live the people, long live the Palestinians." He continued shouting until the verdict was read in full, and then he composed himself again. When he rose to be led back to the execution room at 6 a.m., he looked strong, confident, and calm. Whatever apprehension he may have had only minutes earlier had faded. The general prosecutor asked Mr. Hussein to whom he wanted to give his Quran. He said, "Bandar, the son of Awad al-Bandar, the former chief justice of the Revolutionary Court, who was also to be executed." The room was quiet as everyone began to pray, including Hussein. "Peace be upon Muhammad and his holy family," they said. Two guards added, quote, "supporting his son Muqtada, Muqtada, Muqtada." Hussein seemed a bit stunned, swinging his head in their direction. They were talking about Muqtada al-Sadr, the firebrand cleric, whose militia is now committing some of the worst violence in the sectarian fighting. He is the son of the Shiite cleric Muhammad Sadiq al-Sadr, whom many believe Hussein ordered murdered. "Muqtada?" Hussein spat out, mixing sarcasm and disbelief. Mawafiq al-Ruba, Iraq's national security advisor, asked Hussein if he had any remorse or fear. "No," he said bluntly, "I'm a militant and I have no fear for myself. I've spent my life in jihad and fighting aggression. Anyone who takes this route should not be afraid. Mr. Rubai, standing shoulder to shoulder to Hussein, asked him about the killing of the elder, Mr. Sadr. They were standing so close to each other, others could not hear the exchange. One of the guards so became angry. "You have destroyed us," the guard said. "You have killed us. You have made us live in destitution." Hussein was scornful. He said, "I have saved you from destitution, misery, and destroyed your enemies, the Persians and the Americans." The guard cursed him. "God damn you." Hussein replied, "God damn you." Two witnesses, apparently uninvolved in selecting the guards, exchanged a quiet joke, saying they gathered that the goal of disbanding the militias had yet to be accomplished. The deputy prosecutor berated the guards, saying, quote, "I will not accept any offense directed at him," end quote. Hussein was led up to the gallows without a struggle. His hands were unbound, put behind his back, then fastened again. He showed no remorse. He held his head high. The executioners offered him a hood. He refused. They explained that the thick rope could cut through his neck and offered the scarf he had worn earlier to keep that from happening. Hussein accepted. He stood on the high platform with a deep hole beneath it. He said a last prayer, then with his eyes open, no stutter or choke in his throat, he said his final words, cursing the Americans and the Persians. At 6:10 a.m. local time, the trap door swung open. He seemed to fall a good distance, but he died swiftly. After just a minute, his body was still. His eyes were still open, but he was dead. Despite the scarf, the rope cut a gash into his neck. His body stayed hanging for another 9 minutes as those in attendance broke out in prayer, praising the prophet at the death of a dictator. Reports from this country say that George Bush went to bed prior to the hanging and had a good night's sleep. Jesus Christ. Puppet killing puppet, as Mark Ash writes at truthout.org. Puppet killing puppet. Al in Rochester, New York wrote, I predict that Bush will use the execution of Hussein to create a false sense of justice and closure for the September 2001 attacks. He has tied the two together since the beginning. Meanwhile, the real attacker, who has yet to be caught, will fade further into oblivion. This will lend credibility to the fact that the attacks were actually an inside job or false flag operation, but of course no one will talk about that. We need to keep repeating Osama bin Laden and remind the public that the real criminals are still at large. Writes Al from Rochester, New York. Yeah, the real criminals are still at large, and they're such an enormous number of them reside here in the United States of America. Oh, thanks to people at the conservative website. They named their top 20 most crazed liberals. We only made it to number 12. Keith Olbermann was number 1, but Charles Rangel was number 8. I just want to thank them tremendously for giving us the publicity. I do appreciate it, boys and girls, whoever you are. All right, when we come back, George Bush in his own words from this year just passed. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
It'll take time to restore chaos and order, but we will.
All right. At 26 before the hour, we're going to play for you now the Best of W 2006. So pour yourself a cup of kindness here. And, cover up the kitty's ears. Here's the decider, the President of the United States of America, in his own words.
Of an old era,
I believe this economy will remain strong.
Reducing the cost of the capital has made it easier for investment. And investment has increased the productivity of the American worker. And the productivity increases for the American worker, increase the standard of living for the American worker.
Could we pass law that encourage, you know, consumption? And people are having trouble finding work that Americans won't do.
These are the actual results for the fiscal year that ended February the 30th.
And so the budget, you'll hear numbers this, numbers that. You know, the budget's really kind of generally numbers. They look at numbers. Strong beginning to the holiday shopping season across the country. And I encourage you all to go shopping more.
I'm here doing my duty as educator-in-chief.
Every child should be reading at grade level by the third grade and remain there. The kids were coming out of the school system who were illiterate. And it wasn't right.
Great national goals, such as an illiterate workforce.
We're going to teach our kids how to speak languages.
Laura and I's spirits are uplifted any time we go to a school that's working.
Right here at Parkland Magnet Middle School.
We tend to forget. I mean, ours is a society where things are like instant, so therefore history almost is like so far back it doesn't count.
Iraq, we'll succeed in Iraq. It's tough, and it's hard work. What you're seeing on your TV screen is hard work. These troop levels will be decided by our commanders,
men and women of the armed forces.
They hear from me, victory, and I say to them, what do you need to achieve victory? I know a lot of people want our troops to come home, but I don't want it to come home without achieving the victory.
Our goal in Iraq is victory.
And we've got a plan for victory.
Goal is victory, nothing short of victory. And I'm going to keep talking about the strategy. It'll yield a victory.
Strategy for victory. And victory is a country. Victory is will be achieved. I've been talking about the strategy to achieve victory. We want victory.
Victory in this war on terror.
I am confident in our plan for victory. We're in this fight to win, and we are winning.
The Democrat approach comes down to this. The terrorists win, and America loses.
I believe we will prevail. I understand how hard it is to prevail. I believe we'll prevail. Not only do I know how important it is to prevail, that I believe we'll prevail.
We will fight in Iraq, and we will win in Iraq.
We're going to succeed.
So our short-term strategy is to stay on the offense, and we're going to win. I believe that we're going to win. I know that they have got desires. They say it. This is a war in which the enemy actually speaks out loud.
They have an ideology. They believe things.
In other words, these people have got an ideology and a strategy to implement the ideology.
Tide turning, as I remember, I was raised in the desert, but tides kind of turn. It's easy to see a tide turn.
We're not leaving so long as I'm the president. That would be a huge mistake.
No, we're not leaving, and we're not going to leave before the mission is complete. Somehow it seeped in their conscience that, you know, My attitude was just simply stay the course.
We stay there and get it done.
There is no peace in retreat, and there is no honor in retreat.
I know there's a lot of speculation that these reports in Washington mean there's going to be some kind of graceful exit out of Iraq. We're going to stay in Iraq to get the job done.
I'm not going to pull our troops off the battlefield before the mission is complete.
Sometimes I'm happy.
Wars are not a time of joy. These aren't joyous times.
But one of the great things about America, one of the beauties of our country, is that when we see a young, innocent child blown up by an IED, we cry. I've tried to solve the problem diplomatically to the max and would have committed troops both in Afghanistan and Iraq, knowing what I know today.
I knew exactly what was going to happen when I committed these troops into harm's way. I talked to the families who die. I knew there would be people would lose their life.
Why all the glum faces?
I knew exactly what was coming. And if I didn't think it was the right thing to do, I wouldn't have sent them. The most painful aspect of my presidency has been knowing that good men and women have died in combat. I read about it every night. My heart breaks. And so when you ask about pain, that's pain. But the sacrifice has been worth it.
Iraq's dangerous. It's a dangerous place.
Iraq's a dangerous place.
It's bad in Iraq. Got help?
Bienvenidos. Welcome to the White House.
We'll employ motion sensors, infrared cameras, and unmanned aerial vehicles to prevent illegal crossings.
Mexican Americans have made our nation more vibrant.
Cada día.
They're going broke at home. They want to put food on the table. They go to unbelievable lengths to come and feed their families. We're catching them. We're stopping that.
Bienvenidos. So many distinguished Hispanic Americans in the Jardín de Rosas, mi casa es su casa.
When people are trying to sneak across the border, it makes it hard to enforce the border.
Those who enter the country illegally violate the law.
Ambassador de México, señor, gracias, y también mi amigo.
Bienvenido a Miami. Last night, Jeb and I had some crabs.
We're not saying your democracy has to be like yours. I believe everybody desires to be free. But I also know people need to be convincing. Convinced. We got to convince people. Defeat this notion about our bullying concept of freedom. And when Americans learn to speak a language, learn to speak Arabic, those in the Arabic regional say, guys, America's interested in us. They care enough to learn how we speak.
I still think Russia understands that it's in her interest to be West.
It was not always a given that the United States and America would have a close relationship.
Too much poppy cultivation in Afghanistan.
Got to work together to eradicate poppy. The country is quite famous for growing pomegranates.
Yes, yep.
Or honeydew melons. The United States is India's largest trading partner. The United States is looking forward to eating Indian mangoes. It's in the Gulf Coast country's interest that there be a stable Iran. Iran that is capable of rejecting Iranian influence.
We grow pretty good crops and grow good beef. China has recently read the book on Mao. Make a useful tool of foreign policy for our country. Just try to let the sun shine in.
What a fantastic visit I had to Georgia. One fantastic folk dancing we saw. Fantastic trip. Made fantastic because my friend was a fantastic host. I can remember people hollering for trailers.
Let me just say, we felt your pain.
Making progress. We put cruise ships out. Over a million people. Scattered.
Some wag one time quipped, it's like watching people make sausage.
It's an amazing period in our history when you think about it. There's going to be a building boom down here. It's going to be an exciting time for people. But you're going to have yourself a building boom. You watch. It's a fantastic opportunity. People in faraway places like Washington, D.C. still hear you. The answer to electricity is sooner the better. It's hot over there. There's hope. If I were a young entrepreneur, it'd be an exciting place to go. There is a lot of money, and there's more money to come to help this part of the world. Make sure this part of the world rebounds, and there's a lot of federal employees in this part of the world. Governments don't love. Governments can dispense law and justice, but not love. Out of the harm that came, convert this into a better life. It's like there's a great capacity to absorb hurt. I can remember coming here the times I came and looked hard in people's eyes and saw desperation. It's good to be able to look in people's eyes and not see them all bloodshot. There's a little bounce in people's step. The eyes have cleared up. So that's why I'm here. Say to people from around this part of the world and those who may be watching over the airways, it's a good deal. It's amazing what you can find in the rubbish. Now we got to do smart things.
The globe is warming.
You know, we live in a global world, and that creates uncertainty in some. I understand that. You'll be able to see a technology that will enable you to converse with somebody on long distance, and it seems like the person's right there in the room with you. Battery technologies that will enable you to drive a plug-in hybrid battery. The dream in solar energy is to develop technology so that someday your house is like a little generating plant. It's possible to capture the sun, feed it into your house. I think that's a pretty interesting idea. And there are places in this world where there's a lot of natural gas.
A lot. To use research dollars, your dollars, for research and development to figure out ways to burn corn.
There are limits to how much corn can be used for ethanol. I mean, after all, we got to eat some, and the animals have got to eat. And ethanol is good for drivers. Ethanol is homegrown. Well, I'm feeling pretty healthy. You don't know when you're going to have to start taking prescription drugs. We saw the analysis of a parabola curve.
Envision a card that it can be swiped across a reading device that facilitates the movement of people.
You know, LASIK surgery is an interesting, it's interesting to think about. Micro drive storage and electrochemistry and signal compression. Did I say those words? Just getting into my peroration. Many of the health savings accounts owners are folks with a high school degree. People are plenty smart. If you're a son or a daughter and your mom or dad is eligible for Medicare and he or she hasn't signed up, I believe the son or a daughter has a duty to help the mom or dad understand what's available. That's called love. We need to make sure we connect the patient-doctor relationship to embedded programs like health savings accounts. That's long word talk for if you get sick above a certain amount, your insurance pays for it. If not, you pay for it, but the savings, tax-free. If that's not clear enough, they'll help clear it up for me. I have authorized a terrorist surveillance program to aggressively pursue the international communications of suspected al-Qaeda operatives and affiliates to and from America. The FISA law was written in 1978. We're having a discussion in 2006. It's like saying, you know, you're breaking the law. I'm not.
This is a town of where a lot of people leak.
I don't know who leaked the information, for starters. You hear all kinds of rumors. Look, I want to know. I want to know if anybody's got any information who leaked. You ought to take it to the Justice Department so we can find out the leaker. Just we want to make sure we're extra secret about this deal. Mine's the final decision. The decision was made.
It's really hard to be making rational decisions. And so when you see me make decisions, it's coming from a basic set of beliefs. And that's what a decision maker ought to do. The decision maker ought to make decisions, tough decisions. You know, if you don't have a PhD, you shouldn't be allowed to decide things.
Don't make decisions on polls. Much of my decision was affected by an event. Difficult decisions.
You need presidents who make decisions based upon sound principle. People may not agree with the decisions. Those of you who didn't agree, at least know I'm making my decisions based on something I believe deep in my soul. So we decided, you know, to renovate.
Decisions of war and peace, decisions of security, decisions of trade.
The decisions that we make affect, you know, lives. I don't appreciate the speculation about Don Rumsfeld. He's doing a fine job. I strongly support him. Rumsfeld is doing a fine job. I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense. I am making a change at the Secretary of Defense to bring a fresh perspective as to how to achieve something I think most Americans want, which is a victory. What's changed today is the election's over, and the Democrats won. I have been talking with Don Rumsfeld over a period of time about fresh perspective. He likes to call it fresh eyes.
You mean, when do I hope to announce the strategy? Is that what you're talking about?
This is important. Very important report. It's a very considerate, important report. And a very important part of our working to a new way forward,
figuring out ways to go forward.
And that the way forward is a way forward to achieve our objective, to succeed.
So how to go forward.
New way forward in Iraq.
Discussed the way forward in Iraq.
To analyze the way forward.
I believe that it's very important for people to listen.
I hear voices of discontent. I hear the voices. I listen to all voices.
And I listen a lot.
I got a pretty good antenna.
Actually, I thought we were going to do fine. Shows what I know. It was a thumping.
The beginning of a series of meetings we'll have over the next couple of years, all aimed at solving problems and leading the country.
I'm going to work hard. I'm going to sprint to the finish.
All right, I got to go to work.
Oh, my God. I feel like somebody just stuck me in a laundry bag and beat me with wooden hangers. Ah! Ah! I'll be back in a minute.
Here's a dreamer. Man had an idea. He didn't like the way the cotton shirts that he wore absorbed, you know, his bodily fluids when he exercised, so he came up with a better product. It was so wonderful to sit with dreamers.
Jesus, God. Again, before I forget, I want to thank rightwingnews.com for listing me among the 20 most annoying liberals in the United States, the 2006 edition. My God, this is a great list. I'm just honored. Harry Belafonte, the Smirking Chimp, John Murtha. Who else is in here? Nancy Pelosi, Ted Rall, the Dixie Chicks. Right? Huh? And here we are, number 12. We beat Pelosi. Jason Leopold at Truth Out. Who else is here? Al Gore. Daily Kos, dude, Marcos at Daily Kos, Charles Rangel, the entire program, The View, John Kerry, Cynthia McKinney, Cindy Sheehan, The New York Times, Jimmy Carter, and number one is Keith Olbermann. I really appreciate it. Thank you guys very much for including us in that list. It's a real thrill to be considered by knuckle-dragging, half-witted jackasses to be in the top 20 irritating liberals. Thank you very much. Thanks for the publicity. Get that list out there. For Christ's sake, get it out! You got to get more people to see that. You notice they don't have Tom Hartman in there. They don't have the goddess of Air America. You know, our good friend Randy. They don't have the hideous Ed Schultz. I'm just very honored. I really am. I can't believe we beat Nancy Pelosi. That's really good. Anytime you can make a list of irritating liberals put together by halfwits at something called, what is it? Conservative, I forget what it is. Conservative News or something.com, I don't know. Anytime you can make, right-wing news, is that what it is? Anytime you can make a list like that, that's great. What these halfwits don't understand is how much that kind of publicity, because it gets all around the right-wing blog sites, and a lot of people that read the right-wing blog sites, they go there for the same reason a lot of people look at traffic accidents by the side of the road. You know, you tend to have an attraction to see, oh, God, how many people were killed? You know, when you get home, you say, God, I saw this accident. Well, same thing with these right-wing blog sites. A lot of normal people will go there occasionally and take a look at the moonscape, you know, and everything devoid of anything even remotely resembles life, and then come back and report on what they saw. So, anyway, that'll get us some more listeners, I'm sure. Thanks a lot to the jackasses at, what is it, conservative, rightwingnews.com. To the jackasses at the rightwingnews.com. Thank you. Okay, what else do we have here? Well, we have a break coming, right? And just fair warning, during the third hour of the program tonight, it'll be 11:30 Eastern time, we're going to replay the Bush montage. When I listen to that, it's just astonishing to me. That is maybe 1/20th, 1/50th, 1/100th. Of what this half-witted idiot said that were totally nonsensical during 2006. Jesus, I hope they impeach him. I just hope when the Democrats get into power that they will notify their Republican thugs that they're on the wrong side of history and that George W. Bush is going to be removed from office one way or the other, hopefully peacefully and legally. I hope that occurs, and one of the ways to make it occur, of course, is to put pressure on our Democratic elected members of the House, up to and including, especially including Nancy Pelosi. So anyway, all right, we have a break here. When we come back, when is our guest from Mississippi going to be on? At the bottom of the next. Okay, so stick around for that. We have more fun and frivolity. Do stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. In about 30 minutes, we'll be joined by Jackson County Community Service Coalition Executive Director Jim Yancey to talk about a number of issues, not the least of which is what has been happening in, as Bush puts it, that part of the world since Katrina. Again, we want to welcome folks in the Miami area. WINZ is once again carrying this program. Thanks to that radio station for picking us up, and thanks to the emails we're getting from a lot of folks in the Miami area welcoming us back. It's very kind of you to do that. We're glad to be back, too. Let's do some phone calls while we're just sitting here. Joe is calling from Indiana. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Mike. Happy New Year to you and Kathy and Molly. And
thank you very much.
You guys are best.
Thank you.
I was watching Lou Dobbs tonight. Did you happen to see it?
I did not, no.
He did a story like underclass, you know, cutting out the middle America, losing jobs or whatever, shipping jobs overseas.
Right.
Did something about Daimler Chrysler. Evidently they announced a joint venture between them and a Chinese auto manufacturer.
Yeah, I heard about that, I think, over the weekend.
I work at Chrysler, and we didn't hear a thing about it. And I saw it on news today, and it really just upset me to no end.
Yeah, this will make it much easier for Daimler Chrysler. This is what NAFTA and globalization has done, and it's only going to continue until eventually we are reduced in this country to a nation that provides weapons to the rest of the world and scrap metal.
I understand. And it really irks me because I don't know if you knew this or not, but when we merged with Daimler,
mm-hmm.
Daimler-Benz, Chrysler,
right.
I guess there's some kind of condition with the merger that allowed the UAW president to sit on Daimler-Chrysler's board.
Mm-hmm.
So I was hopefully calling, and any UAW Daimler-Chrysler workers listening, you know, if they could get a hold of their stewards or their committeemen or their union presidents or whatever, and just start harking them, you know, because we
sure.
can't let the whole new, you know, car go overseas somewhere because, you know, that's jobs that we're losing here in America.
Yeah, it's a horrifying situation, but once Chrysler sold its soul to Daimler-Benz,
yeah.
One of the things they sold off was the right to have any kind of forceful voice in what happens inside the company. You notice Daimler, it's not Chrysler Daimler, it's Daimler Chrysler.
Yeah, I understand.
And there's, of course, there's a reason for that.
I understand.
I think United Auto Workers, first of all, I think your president, Gettelfinger.
Yeah, we've been Gettelfingered, yes.
Yeah, he's part of the problem.
Yeah.
This guy did not come from the shop floor. I don't know where the hell he came from.
Exactly.
But Gettelfinger is part of the problem. He doesn't give a damn. He will sacrifice until there's 30 UAW members left, thinking that he's making a deal to keep those 30 employed. In the meantime, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of auto workers, not just Daimler Chrysler, but Ford and General Motors, and it's astonishing what has happened to the union movement in this country. And it's also astonishing that as the union movement disappears, so does the middle class.
And we witnessed it here in Kokomo. I mean, with Delphi.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And restructured and everything, mm-hmm. and the lost wages there. You know, there's businesses closing down. And
when I was a kid, you know, I'm so old. I remember when Delphi was Delco.
Yeah.
And owned, wholly owned.
My dad retired from there. Yeah.
Yeah, wholly owned by General Motors. And.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in Toledo, Ohio, which was nothing more than a feeder city for Detroit back in the day when Detroit was defined automaking on the planet. So I don't know what to say.
I just wanted to get it out, and anybody listening, you know, get a hold of your stewards, get a hold, tell them we need to put a stop to this because it's not only hurting us now, it's going to hurt us down the road too because, I mean, this is lost potential.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And we need to be working for the future.
Absolutely.
As well as taking care of today.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right, Joe. I'm glad you called in. Take care.
Right.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Wayne is calling from Boston. Hey, Wayne. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. I've been thinking about you all week. When I woke up Saturday morning and I seen that execution, I just couldn't believe it. And our country's behind that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's more than being behind it. I think we engineered it. This you know, we are caught on something in this country right now that is horrifying. I hope we survive it. I hope we have some leaders who would try to get rid of this sick bastard that's in the White House. I just hope that happens. But we're really caught in a situation here. Wayne, that is not only dangerous, it's immoral. We are setting the United States up to be something that nobody, I don't think, really intended it to be.
You I'm know? Starting to think that this is an old score from the CIA when he did things for the CIA. That's what I really believe.
Well, I don't disagree with that at all. You know, in murdering Saddam in the same manner that he murdered so many people, I'm not saying the bastard was anything other than a thug. He was a thug. He was a thug that was developed. He was a killer that was developed and nurtured and trained and mollycoddled by the CIA, by God knows how many U.S. Administrations. But just like with the death of Gerald Ford, a lot of secrets are now irretrievable. With the death of Saddam Hussein, that's the reason one to kill him so quick, is to hide all the stuff, to make all the stuff disappear that he knew about Bush and about Kissinger and about Reagan and Bush 1 and so many of these people who put him in office. So there's no chance now. I mean, you know, he's dead. And this is you know, it should be an object lesson to any government of tyrants that deals with the United States. And any tyrant will deal with the United States because they figure it's a good deal. Pay attention, you half-witted jackasses. This is what happens. You know, once the Bush family or whoever's involved is sick of you, they'll set it up so you get murdered.
You bring up a good point, though, like their ambassador, Tariq Aziz, right? He ain't charged with the crime, but they're not going to let him out. They're probably going to have him killed, too, because he probably knows the same secrets Saddam knows.
Yeah, eventually, with the Bush crime family, they kill as many as they can, hide the bodies. The only problem with the Saddam execution for the Bush crime family was it got so much publicity. Usually when the CIA or the United States government wants to have somebody murdered, they do it quietly, they do it off stage. Maybe some enterprising reporter will pick up on it. This time it was all done publicly, and I think the result of the hanging of this tyrant is going to be just violence on a scale that we haven't seen so far.
I wish people in Congress would wake up. What are these people doing? Just letting this guy run amok like that. And it's so obvious.
Letting what guy run amok?
George Bush. He's doing what he wants. They're not doing nothing. They're not doing their jobs. It's either they're with them or they're against them. They've got to be with them if they're letting them do it.
I know. He's,
just John Kerry and Kennedy in my state, a bunch of lames.
I hear you.
Democrat, Republican, I don't care. They got to go. Both parties. Somehow, some way.
I hear you loud and clear. Thanks a lot, Wayne.
All right.
Take care. Take care. Excuse me. I hear that from a lot of people. You know what Wayne's talking about, and the way Wayne puts it, I put it the same way. You know, something's got to be done. You know what? Somebody, please do something. Somebody's got, you know. And you have to be so careful what you say, or the Department of Homeland Security or the CIA or the FBI is going to show up, and maybe you'll have a car accident or something, but or get arrested or sent someplace to be questioned, unless you very careful with what you say. But what are we supposed to do? I mean, how much longer is this supposed to go? Jesus Christ, I've been saying that for 3 years, Gabby, 4 years. How much more of this can American republic stand? Somebody might say, well, you've got a very resilient country there, reform a government, because no matter how bad the leadership is under this jerk, somehow you manage to continue. Even though most Americans know two elections were stolen, even though most Americans know that this war is an atrocity, it's a war crime by Bush and his cronies, somehow you survive. Well, you know, go shopping. That's what Bush says. I want everybody to go shopping. This is sick stuff, man. It really is.
Higher, it's more of Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Back to phone calls here. Jay is calling from Long Island, New York. Hey, Jay. Hey, Jay.
Hey.
How you doing?
Good.
Talk to me.
I wanted to tell the audience about ClarkVersBush.com, specifically the Bush supporters out there who are not insane. Once they read the story there, they'll realize that they're making a big mistake, and then that'll be the ballgame.
Yeah, what's the site again?
Clark vs. Bush, ClarkVSBush.com.
Okay, and what's, give us
what's what I told you about before. It's a story I'm about to have published, set in the context of a teacher discussing with his students all the ample evidence that Bush is as corrupt as he is, inept, and needs to go, and why it was a huge mistake for Clark not to be the nominee. And most of the students in the class are people like Jeanine Garofalo, Keith Olbermann, and other people like that, and that gives it a lot of, it'll garner a lot of publicity because of that, and it's kind of funny, although it's also infuriating. One woman wrote to me recently that it gave her shell shock afterwards, but she liked it a lot.
Now, this is a fictional...
It's set in a fictional context, but it uses real information, all the evidence that Bush can't communicate, and that's one of the primary things a good leader should have, and he's also not trustworthy. William Buckley Jr. has also said the man should resign, so evidence like that, you know, it's not going well, and Clark has the most appeal to people on the right and the middle who are not insane.
Now, you're talking about Wesley Clark?
Of course.
And he's someone that you support politically?
Yeah, I have a guy at work who voted for Bush twice, and he read my story and said, yeah, I would have voted for Clark over Kerry now that I've read that, and if Bush stepped down for Clark right now, that would be a good thing. And there are plenty of people who will tell you, the people who generally lean towards Bush or the right will tell you, yeah, Clark's a Democrat who you'll be comfortable with.
Why do you think that is?
West Point valedictorian, Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, took 4 bullets in Vietnam, Economics Rhodes Scholar endorsed by 55 ambassadors, and he just has a certain energy about him, as other people have said. And he just has poise, and we're in a war that's not going well, and Clark obviously is the guy who has the reputation internationally, nationally, respect. He knows what he's talking about. McCain has said of his book that it deserves wide readership on both sides of the Atlantic. I mean, he's a military genius, and he's an economics, you know, smarty, and he's just a very likable, sharp guy who has dedicated his life in the service when he could have been making $1 million a year, you know, on Wall Street. So,
but given all that, I'm not trying to be a smartass here. I still don't know what makes you think that these right-wing halfwits would support him.
I'm saying that
they would go out. They would swift boat him. By the time they got done with him, you would be believing, or they'd be trying to make you believe that he avoided military service and hid out in Alabama someplace.
Well, I've heard that, and I understand that that's an obstacle because, like, my distinction is there's people on the right who are insane. There are people on the right who are not insane. They just haven't been presented with all the information as well as they could be. And like I said, what are they going to say about a guy who took 4 bullets in Vietnam, Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, et cetera, et cetera? And I have
But that doesn't mean anything to right wingers.
It doesn't mean anything to them.
Wait a second. You make it sound like they respect people that serve in the military. They don't respect people in the military. They think they're chumps.
Yeah, but the thing is,
they only use this fake respect for military people in order to get votes. But the
distinction is that they might attempt to do what you're talking about. No, they will attempt, but it won't get any traction.
Okay, again, I'm not trying to be a smartass with you, but what makes you think that the right-wingers are going to... I mean, why would they give a damn about Wesley Clark?
He's everything... I'm just telling you from personal experience.
A second. He's everything that they could never be because all right-wingers are cowards. All right-wingers are liars. All right-wingers are sneaks. So I just don't...
So what are you saying, that they would be more inclined to go for someone like a Senator Edwards or Kerry?
No, I don't think they'll go for... I don't think they'll ever vote for any...
Well, I don't think those people are... It's not worth discussing those people. I'm talking about the people who are... You know, they wouldn't necessarily vote for Republicans or against Democrats. You just have to give them someone who is amenable. And Clark is the guy who has that appeal like no other Democrat for all of the reasons I've mentioned. And I'm not, you know, I've met these people. I've heard other Clarkies say, yeah, I hear people on the right say, Clark's the guy I would be okay with. In fact, I would prefer him. There's Republicans for Democrats. There's a MySpace thing called Republicans.
Well,
pro
all right.
ClarkVSBush.com, please.
What is it again?
ClarkVSBush.com. It's very
ClarkVSBush.com. All right.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for checking in, Jay. Although, like I say, I fundamentally disagree. Any right winger who doesn't have all the information about people like Wesley Clark is your typical right winger. They don't read, they don't study, they don't know anything. They're halfwits. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Anybody anticipated the breach of the levees?
Each night and day, I know I'm not wrong.
26 before the hour. Jim Yancey is the executive director of the Jackson County Mississippi Community Services Coalition, and in that position, he has been working very, very, very hard against incredible odds and forces and inertia to help rescue that part of the world, as George Bush puts it. He joins us now. Hey, Jim, how you doing?
Good, Mr. Malloy. How are you?
Well, call me Mike. Let's start out with the website, first of all, so people can go to this maybe while we're talking.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead. What is it?
It's www.jcc.org. JCCSC.org.
JCCSC.org.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I like people to take a look at that while we're talking. Jim, first of all, just a little background on you. How did you get involved in what you're involved in?
Well, my background, since I was in the U.S. Air Force back in the early 70s as a survival instructor, and I've probably been teaching survival skills ever since as a counselor, just instead of outdoors, it's indoors. And about in 2002, I came and worked for the coalition as the prevention director. And in the process, one of our mission statements is to identify gaps in service. And when Katrina hit last year in August, we noticed a number of areas where people were starting to fall through the cracks. And that's when we stepped in.
People falling through the cracks, you know, that's a phrase that we're all familiar with. And I've heard that in the context of, you know, maybe kids who get missed in a school lunch program in Chicago, or old folks who are overlooked in a healthcare plan in Miami. But dear God in heaven, how does an entire region of the country get overlooked or fall through the cracks?
Good question. One of the problems is we have a saying down here that you got to get the hay out of the barn and down on the ground so the cows can eat it.
Uh-huh.
And the hay is the money and resources that's up in the barn. And you got to get it down on the ground so the folks can get to it. And one problem has just been the red tape of our government in trying to get, for whatever reason, trying to help folks through the red tape of getting these funds down here. Living down here in that is just a unbelievable problem for a lot of people. An example of somebody falling through the cracks is, we've got a homeowner's grant down here that the governor is pushing, and if you live in a flood zone, well, you don't qualify for the homeowner's grant, or if you make a certain income, or what if you're a senior citizen and you're renting, or what if you're anybody and you're renting right now? That's one of our big problems right now are renters. Where are they going to go?
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to I've got four employees, and I was talking to one of my employees, and her daughter is paying over $600 for a one-bedroom loft, which I think she was paying $350 before the storm.
Mm-hmm.
So in some parts of the country, $600 is not a lot of money for a one-bedroom loft, but down here it certainly is. So,
what in the world would make the price go up almost 80%? What or the rent? Is this some good American, I don't know, a Christian conservative just doing his or her part to... I mean, where does that? Why is the rent jacked up? Has the view improved from this loft?
I think the view is somewhat cleared out, but I'm not an economics person, but I think it's just supply and demand.
Or maybe gouging and exploitation, yes, and being a real, yep, son of a bitch to your fellow American. That's maybe that. You know, Bush says one of the things he would give himself a good grade on is cutting a big old fat check for Mississippi Katrina victims. He claims he's done that. That $6-8 billion has been shoveled down there, and the hay is on the ground. Who's lying, Jim? The folks on the ground or George W. Bush?
Well, the folks on the ground down here I deal with have not seen that money.
Right.
And part of the problem has been, a good example is our own Board of Supervisors down here in Jackson County, where we had 34% of our homes were completely destroyed. Well, 34% of the homes in Mississippi that were completely destroyed were destroyed in Jackson County. Mm-hmm. And I think FEMA had hired Ashprit, which was to remove debris. Was to remove the debris.
Mm-hmm.
And our Board of Supervisors fired them because of the terrible job they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand, you know, it was some sort of contract they had with the government over, I think it was close to $500 million. And they were doing a terrible job with it. And our local folks that were, our local haulers that were wanting to get debris, wanting to make some money,
mm-hmm,
and remove debris, weren't getting, from what I was told, were not getting the really good hauls where I guess you can get a lot of debris and take it up to the sites where you dump it at.
Well, why is that? Why not hire local people who know the neighborhood, who know their neighbors? Why not do that?
Well, I don't know, and I think our Board of Supervisors, that's what frustrated them so much. That's why they fired them.
The guy?
They fired Ashprit, the company that was down in Jackson County.
The company. Well, so Bush and Trent Lott and Haley Barbour aren't helping out?
Well, I mean... they are helping out in the sense that you talk to the, we've just got a grant, I understand, of $280 million for Katrina cottages. We have a number of things that the governor's got this homeowners grant going, but the problem I deal with on a daily basis is the nature of this storm was so huge that for every program you've got that the government's created, we've got, for every one person they catch, we've got two people falling through the cracks. I mean, here we are 16 months into this thing, and I was just reading the other day, and we work over in Hancock County to some degree. Hancock County, we still have 80% of the people over there still homeless, 80% of them.
All right, let me ask you something.
Sure.
Jim, do you think the reason this situation is festering and become rotten and suffering and gangrenous is because certain issues are falling through the cracks or the red tape, or because there are political forces, mostly Republican, who want it this way in order to clear people out, to get them the hell away from that high-profit Gulf Coast property, and who really don't give a damn, just you know, this is where I have a hard time, Jim. I don't see this as accident or red tape or bureaucratic nonsense. I see this as incompetency, lies, deception, deliberate actions against people because they happen to be poor or non-white or even worse than that, the same way they've done in Iraq, given these big contracts to GOP contributors who then just steal the money. Now, I'm having a problem trying to get in my mind that it's just because people aren't paying attention, Jim. To me, it's criminal activity that's going on. Do you disagree with that?
No, I think that people are paying attention. I think they're paying a lot of attention down here, what's going on. the issue for me is that we're kind of, I'm somewhat in a tunnel because of, we deal with what's in front of us. I read the newspaper every now and then or watch a little bit of the news, but I'm out every day talking to folks that still have not got their knees bent, which is hard to believe.
Right.
And, you know, I will say this. We've got some sort of Tier 1 tourist program planned for 2010
sure.
on Mississippi Gulf Coast where they're
sure.
going to add a number of casinos and about 22,000 beds. And that's great, but we still need to get our folks back in their homes. I just can't believe we're going to go build this huge tourist area down here. But first, without getting the people from the Mississippi Gulf Coast that have lived here for decades and their families have been here for ages and put them back in their homes. Instead of what we're finding is, like the other night, I was at the fellow's house who's 70-something years old, and he can't afford to make payments on his land, so he's going to have to leave. And you can come across all kind of stories like that down here.
What
so why aren't we taking care of those folks?
Well, that's the essential question. But what makes you think, Jim? And I'm not trying to challenge you here. This is an honest
yeah.
question. What makes you think that it's going to change? That the folks who are living in lean-tos and falling apart FEMA trailers, who are renters and now have no place to go, whose families are scattered, who are 77 years old and can't continue to make payments on their property. What makes you think that's going to change?
It may not change. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to change or not. That's a great question.
But you're working to make it change, aren't you? I mean,
when you go out here and you see folks that are still living in a FEMA trailer or in a partially completed house,
right.
And it's very difficult to understand. At the same time, you know, I don't want to say that we're count us as victims because the folks down here are playing a role in their own recovery efforts, but it's just a very difficult process because of this red tape, and a lot of folks don't understand it. And
Jim,
here's the other. Yeah, go
Jim,
ahead.
Let me get you to hold on. I got to sure. do a break here. Let's just pick it up when we come back. All right.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, we're talking with Jim Yancey, who is working to try to restore some sanity, dignity, life to Mississippi Gulf Coast. Stay with us.
I think there ought to be zero tolerance of looting. It's very important for the citizens in all affected areas to take personal responsibility and assume kind of a civic sense of responsibility.
10 before the hour, we're talking with Jim Yancey, who is the executive director of the Jackson County Community Services Coalition. In Mississippi Gulf Coast. Where were we, Jim? I kind of lost.
Mike, I think I can answer your question as well. You said we were talking about the difficulty of putting these folks' lives back together.
Right.
And I will tell you this. It has the appearance of something else going on because I, for the life of me, as creative and as innovative as we are as a people, why this has been so difficult.
Yeah.
And, you know, is there something else going on? Are they trying to move folks out here so they can create Casinoville? I don't know. But what I do know is that this problem is taking a whole lot longer than it needs to be taken. And the people, a lot of organizations I talk to down here are telling me that it's going to take 5, 6, 8 years to rebuild the coast. And I will tell you, we don't have 5 years. We don't have 3 years. We can do this in 1.5 to 2 years. We can get it rebuilt. But some folks are into sustaining long-term recovery because apparently there's money to be made in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm down here on the ground with these folks, and we talk to them on a daily basis. Like, and I'm not the only organization. There's a lot of organizations down here that do that. But to think it's going to take 3, 4, 5 years to rebuild this place, we don't have that kind of time for our senior citizens or any of our other folks because people are human beings, and they can only, you know, last so long in these kind of situations, this kind of conditions. Some folks are in their homes. A lot of folks are. But we've got just many folks that are, have yet to get back in their homes.
Certainly the number of the latter is great enough that there is a horrendous problem in southern Mississippi.
Yes.
And also in Louisiana. I don't know about the part of Alabama that that got hit, but as far as I can gather, I hear what you're saying, that they're talking about 5 or 6 years because that drags it out. That, just like the war in Iraq, it drags it out. A lot of people, it gives them more time to steal. I'm talking about government contractors who work, who are connected to what I refer to as the Bush crime family. I don't know if you know me or my program, Jim, but the Bush administration thoroughly disgusts me in everything that they do. And to me, what happened on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and the response, I should say, to what happened on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, God knows nobody caused that, but what happened afterwards, the lack of what happened, is exactly, as far as I'm concerned, a mirror image of the kind of chaos and destruction and death that has happened in Iraq, not on such a scale, but it's like people in the federal government, in whatever agency it takes, can't take a look at the situation and say, okay, we need building material. Okay, we need to build affordable housing for all the renters. Okay,
yes.
We need contractors down there who know the area, whom people will trust. We don't need people coming in from Texas or Michigan or Florida, bless their hearts, who want to come in and help. But, you know, church groups can only help so much. Then you've got to have a massive influx of money, a massive influx of engineers and sociologists and psychologists and school teachers and doctors and paramedics and legal people. And that's not happening.
So as far as
I'm concerned, this is deliberate. It's calculated. It's another example of how this corrupt administration just condemns people to death for no reason other than the fact that they're not connected, they're not well off, they're not active members of the GOP, they don't fundraise for Haley Barbour or George W. Bush, and therefore to hell with them. And it doesn't make any difference what happens to them. This is how I live over here in Atlanta. And when that hurricane hit, we had tens of thousands of people come here from New Orleans, from Mississippi, and from parts of Alabama. And we got chances to talk with some of these people at the Red Cross shelters. And the horror and the shock and the disbelief that is still out there. This is the thing that drives me crazy. What's it been, 18 months, a year and a half almost?
Almost, 16 months. We're getting ready to hit number 17, yeah.
All right, I'll tell you what I want to do, if you can do it. I want you to stick around and for another little segment over the top of the hour. Can you hang on for a little bit?
Yes.
All right, because I want to find out from you what it is that you want people to do. And, you know, to me, the answer is very clear cut. If I were you, what I would want would be for the damn federal government, whose taxes to support them I've been paying all my working life, I would want the federal government to step in and very quickly and efficiently and properly and morally and ethically take care of a section of the United States that through no fault of its own was devastated. And to hell with the fat cats, to hell with the casinos, just get people their lives back. Now, that's what I would want, and that's what I would think that the goal that you're working toward, but I'm not sure. So that's why, I want you to explain what folks can do, and if you can hang around for another segment, we'll talk about that when we come back. All right, Jim?
Great.
All right. Jim Yancey is the executive director of the Jackson County Citizens Coalition. You can find out about this. Just go to the website during the break here. Go to JCCSC. That's JCCSC.org. And check it out. We're going to talk with Jim just a little bit more when we come back after the top of the hour. Okay? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. Malloy here on NOVAM Radio. It's about 7 past the hour. We're talking with Jim Yancey in Mississippi, who is the executive director of the Jackson County Citizens Coalition. You can go to his website, jccsc.org, and find out what they're about. And during the break, Jim, I went back. I've been to your site before. But some of the services that you offer have to do with kids. And
yes.
I'm not there, so I don't know how overwhelming or manageable or underwhelming the situation is. What I suppose is what I've seen from reports and articles and images from that part of the country of utter devastation. I hear stories of children who can't go to school, of old people who can't get their medicines, of people in desperate need of mental health services who can't get that. And I just wonder, and I realize you got to look ahead. You can't look back, as Mark Twain said, or somebody said, don't look back. Or I guess it was Satchel Paige. Don't look back because you might see what's gaining on you. But what is it you want people to do?
Well, back to what you said earlier, Mike, was, yeah, we want the federal government to come in here and do the right thing and have a massive push down here. But the folks that I work with have given up on the federal government.
Uh-oh.
I mean, it's 16 months, and, you know, where are they? And the federal government has helped a lot of folks out. But, again, there are folks that don't meet the requirements for whatever these grants or whatever these different things that the federal or state government has. Mm-hmm. And, if you know, the problem with the federal government is by the time you want them to come up with some sort of massive effort, which is you're exactly right. They need a huge influx of materials, and we've got contractors down here and influx of cash on the ground so we can get the materials either here or appliances and continue rebuilding these homes. The problem is by the time when the federal government gets that idea, it's been, from my perspective, that somebody's going to get a giant contract or somebody's going to get this contract or that contract, and by the time the flow of money gets to the coast, whether it's Louisiana coast, Mississippi Gulf coast, it drips out. It doesn't pour out. It needs to be pouring out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Do you think there's any chance that the new Congress that gets seated here in a few days and is Democrat controlled, both the House and the Senate, but more importantly the House, and the House can appropriate money that can flow directly to organizations like yours and many other ones that understand the needs, are up close with the needs of the people, and get this done. Do you have any reason to hope that a Democratic Party-led House is going to act any differently than what the Republicans have done?
Well, that's a good question. I hope they do. Gene Taylor, who is a Democrat down here on the coast, has been raising a stink about this for quite a while, so he lives down here with us. So my hope is that happens.
Now, he's a representative?
He's down here in Hancock County.
Okay, he's in the House of Representatives in Washington.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
And Representative Taylor's been down here on a backhoe. He's been down here. He just doesn't come down for one day. He comes down for a while and works.
Mm-hmm.
Then he goes back up to Washington. So, you know, I hope that happens, but I also plan for the worst. And the worst is that the politics get in the middle of this thing and it gets held up again because, again, I'll tell you that you can be resilient only for so long.
Right.
And it's just a very difficult process when you've lived down here in this stuff. And it's somewhat of a paradox because a lot of folks are back in their homes in Louisiana and Mississippi. But a lot of folks aren't, and they haven't been for 16 months.
Now, your friend and mine, the Sarge,
yes,
has talked on this program about and his website trying to get truckers to bring I would assume, donated materials or bought materials, whatever it is, into the area where you are to help with some of this construction. Talk to us a little bit about that, if you would.
Sure. Yeah, there's three things we need. I mean, barring that the federal government could get on a, could pony up and be down here with the stuff that we need, this is what we're doing right now, and it's working. We need three things on the ground as we speak. We need cash on the ground to purchase items locally, because we can get them at a discounted, a very low price, because we know these folks from Lowe's, from the lumber companies, from our local stores down here. The second thing we need are donated goods, whether it be appliances or furniture, and I think that's what Sarge is talking about. And Sean Ryan out of Phoenix at AM 1480 KPHX has got three trucks coming down on actually Valentine's Day. They're bringing in, and we've got a warehouse. The county has given us a warehouse rent-free to store this stuff in. The city of Pascagoula has given us a volunteer center to put volunteers up in to help us. And so that's the third thing we need, are volunteers. So until the government shows up on their horse, and I'm not trying to be facetious here, but until they show up and with the cavalry, those are the three things we need: cash on the ground to purchase items, donated goods to help put back in the home for these folks, and then volunteers to help rebuild the homes that hadn't been rebuilt yet.
You know, we have we've been adding radio stations to this network. KPHX in Phoenix is our flagship station. We have been adding a very steady stream of stations now, from Seattle to Portland to San Francisco to Miami, and points in between. And for the folks that are listening tonight, you just heard what Jim said about KPHX in Phoenix, that one of the employees at that radio station is organizing. You said he's got three semi-loads?
He's got three 26-foot trucks that I think U-Haul has donated.
Okay, 26. Okay. That's still a heck of a lot of material to bring down. And I'm hoping, I'm in Atlanta. We don't have a radio station that carries this program or this network here, but I'm hoping that folks who do listen to this program on various stations around the country may get an idea to do what the Phoenix affiliate is doing. And again, I don't know the extent to which the station itself is involved, but for folks who are listening to this, Jim Yancey may have put a bug in your ear about what you can do. A lot of folks can't go to Mississippi and go to work swinging a hammer. A lot of people can't, you know, reach into their checking account and come up with $500, but a lot of people can work together to send materials down there, or if not $500, $50. Now, all this information, Jim, is at your website, right?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Yeah. Lord. All right. Tell me what else you want people to know about your organization and what they can do. And we got a couple of minutes here.
Okay. Well, the Community Coalition, we were the Children's Coalition until about 3 months ago, and we changed our name just because of the type of work that we're doing now, which is helping folks restore and rebuild their lives. There's two problems down here, Mike. One is you've got to rebuild people's homes, but the second problem is you've got to restore people's lives.
Right.
And people don't have the time. They've got two jobs right now. They've got the job of going to work and the job of rebuilding their homes. So, you know, going to a counselor, you've got to be kidding me. They don't have time to. So what we've tried to do is either have counselors come in, or we do counseling ourselves, and we go out into the areas where the homes are. So folks don't have to go to a counselor. If they want to go to a counselor, that's fine, but we'll go on site and counsel with them, talk with them. And a lot of the counseling is really just setting up with a cup of coffee and talking with one another. It's not so much of a formal setting because of the nature of where we live right now. It's our new normal.
Yeah. Oh, my God, the new normal.
But I will tell you this, you're exactly right. Some folks can't volunteer, and some folks can. Some folks can't send money, and some folks can. And some folks, they can donate goods, whether it be furniture or whether it be appliances. But we've got two warehouses down here, and I learned how to drive a forklift not too long ago, and so that's where I spend a lot of my Saturdays, is moving equipment around.
Now, when you're talking about donations, let's be real clear here. You're talking about hardware. You're talking about appliances, furniture, and building materials. You're not talking about perishables or food or canned goods or clothing.
Exactly. You're talking about things like sheetrock or
right.
2x4 studs, refrigerators,
nails, hammers.
Nails, yes, yes.
Right.
Furniture, microwave ovens, standard size doors for inside, or queen or double. We've got a lot of, we've just had somebody bring in about 100 queen and double size mattresses for us. So, you know, these folks just, people just show up, or I get a call and somebody says, can you use this? And so, we're going to, again, we see this as it's going to take us about 18 months to 2 years. And I know you're going to hear on the news, this is going to take 5 years to rebuild the coast. I'm just telling you, we don't have 5 years.
I hear that. I hear that loud and clear. All right, Jim, we're about out of time here. I'll tell you what, if you don't mind, if you would stay in touch with us, Kathy, our producer here, because I would like to do periodic updates. I'd like to do not let more than 3 months go by before we talk again and find out what's going on. Will that work for you?
Yes, I appreciate you having me on, Mike, certainly.
All right, well, just please stay in touch. And the website is jccsc.org. His name is Jim Yancey, and he's busting his rear end to try to bring some kind of relief to folks down there. Jim, thank you very much. I really respect you for what you're doing. Thanks for being a guest. We'll talk again, all right?
Thank you. We will.
All right, sir. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Seen a parking guitar in the backseat of the car. Hey, are you ever leaving Mississippi with the radio?
Past the hour. Yeah, go to, if you would, go to the website, jccsc.org, and check out what Jim Yancey and his crew are doing. William wrote in regarding what Jim said about giving up on the federal government. William writes, two words, Berlin Airlift. They were on the ground in less than 24 hours providing food and support. The federal government can do this job. It's the bastards in office in this administration that are keeping it from happening as quickly and completely as necessary. Yeah, I don't envy Jim Yancey. He doesn't have the luxury or the freedom that I do to call these bastards bastards, because eventually he's going to have to deal with federal agencies. But it's just astonishing that 16 months after that tragedy, people are still suffering. Kate writes in references the Second Coming, William Butler Yeats. I just say it that way to piss you off. I said one time when I was doing the program, you know, I was reading something and came across Yeats's name and just mispronounced it because I pronounced it the way it's written. And I got an email from a real, I don't know, just somebody who just really busted my chops because they assumed that I was so functionally illiterate that I didn't know how to pronounce Yeats's name. But anyway, that's a different universe. Kate emails in a couple of quotes from Yeats's poem, The Second Coming. One of the quotes, mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. Another quote, the best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. This is the poem that talks about slouching towards Bethlehem. Kate writes, "These people are scaring the blank out of me, Mike. It's almost worse than before the election. I'm beginning to wonder if they let the Democrats win to distract the masses, cornered rat and all that. Well, it will be one hell of a ride, whichever way it goes, I guess. Our poor kids, if we don't stop these bastards." Kate. Yeah. Just too much is too overwhelming here. You know, like I said, last Friday we had every intention of doing the show, and there's some major technical problems that we got worked out. Matter of fact, I think we got them worked out Saturday, but, you know, it didn't do any good for the Friday night program. So, as far as I'm concerned, we were going to have Jim Yancey on that night, Kathy, Friday night. And then we were going to try to talk about and handle the Saddam Hussein hanging, and everything had to sit over the weekend, including New Year's Eve. And, I just feel like somebody has been choking me for the past 4 days. So if I sound a little bit out of it tonight, that's the reason. It's just difficult to miss a night on this program anyway. All right, your phone calls when we come back, and also the Bush.
Committed to dealing with poverty. First, let me make it very clear, poor people aren't necessarily killers. Just because you happen to be not rich doesn't mean you're willing to kill.
Oh, my God. All right, now, based on the absolute reality that not everyone who listens to this program listens to the entire 3 hours, as a matter of fact, probably nobody does, we want to replay for you what we played a couple of hours ago. Kathy put this together. It's a retrospective on George Bush's comments just in 2006. And this represents maybe one one-hundredth of the asinine, half-witted statements that he made. And as I mentioned the last time we played a couple hours ago, you'll be able to put his comments in context in what the subject is. We just let him ramble. So here we go again. George Bush with his... His old lang syne.
End of an old era.
I believe this economy will remain strong.
Reducing the cost of the capital has made it easier for investment, and investment has increased the productivity of the American worker, and the productivity increases for the American worker, increase the standard of living for the American worker.
If we pass law that encourage consumption, and people are having trouble finding work that Americans won't do.
These are the actual results for the fiscal year that ended February the 30th.
And so the budget, you'll hear numbers this, numbers that.
You know, the budgets really kind of generally are numbers. They look at numbers.
Strong beginning to the holiday shopping season across the country. And I encourage you all to go shopping more.
I'm here doing my duty as educator-in-chief. Every child should be reading at grade level by the third grade and remain there. The kids were coming out of the school system who were literate. And it wasn't right. Great national goals, such as an illiterate workforce.
We're going to teach our kids how to speak languages.
Laura and I's spirits are uplifted any time we go to a school that's working.
Right here at Parkland Magnet Middle School.
We tend to forget. I mean, ours is a society where things are like instant, so therefore history almost is like so far back it doesn't count.
Iraq, we'll succeed in Iraq. It's tough, and it's hard work. What you're seeing on your TV screen is hard work. These troop levels will be decided by our commanders, men and women of the armed forces. They hear from me, victory. And I say to them, what do you need to achieve victory? I know a lot of people want our troops to come home, but I don't want it to come home without achieving the victory.
Our goal in Iraq is victory.
And we've got a plan for victory.
Goal is victory, nothing short of victory. And I'm going to keep talking about the strategy. It'll yield a victory. Strategy for victory. And victory is a country. Victory is will be achieved. I've been talking about the strategy to achieve victory. We want victory.
Victory in this war on terror.
I am confident in our plan for victory. We are in this fight to win, and we are winning.
The Democrat approach comes down to this. The terrorists win, and America loses.
I believe we will prevail. I understand how hard it is to prevail. I believe we'll prevail. Not only do I know how important it is to prevail, that I believe we'll prevail.
We will fight in Iraq, and we will win in Iraq.
We're going to succeed. So our short-term strategy is to stay on the offense, and we're going to win. I believe that we're going to win. I know that they have got desires. They say it. This is a war in which the enemy actually speaks out loud.
They have an ideology. They believe things.
In other words, these people have got an ideology and a strategy to implement the ideology. Tide turning, as I remember, I was raised in the desert, but tides kind of turn. It's easy to see a tide turn. We're not leaving so long as I'm the president. That would be a huge mistake. No, we're not leaving. And we're not going to leave before the mission is complete. Somehow it seeped in their conscience that, you know, My attitude was just simply stay the course. We stay there and get it done. There is no peace in retreat, and there is no honor in retreat.
I know there's a lot of speculation that these reports in Washington mean there's going to be some kind of graceful exit out of Iraq. We're going to stay in Iraq to get the job done.
I'm not going to pull our troops off the battlefield before the mission is complete. Sometimes I'm happy. Wars are not a time of joy. These aren't joyous times.
One of the great things about America, one of the beauties of our country, is that when we see a young, innocent child blown up by an IED, we cry.
I tried to solve the problem diplomatically to the max and would have committed troops both in Afghanistan and Iraq, knowing what I know today. I knew exactly what was going to happen when I committed these troops into harm's way. I talked to the families who die. I knew there would be people would lose their life.
Wow, the glum faces.
I knew exactly what was coming. And if I didn't think it was the right thing to do, I wouldn't have sent them. The most painful aspect of my presidency has been knowing that good men and women have died in combat. I read about it every night. My heart breaks. And so when you ask about pain, that's pain. That the sacrifice has been worth it. Iraq's dangerous. It's a dangerous place. Iraq's a dangerous place. It's bad in Iraq. Got help?
Bienvenidos. Welcome to the White House.
We'll employ motion sensors, infrared cameras, and unmanned aerial vehicles to prevent illegal crossings.
Mexican Americans have made our nation more vibrant.
Cada día.
They're going broke at home. They want to put food on the table. They go to unbelievable lengths to come and feed their families. We're catching them. We're stopping that.
Bienvenidos. So many distinguished Hispanic Americans in the Jardín de Rosas. Mi casa es su casa.
When people are trying to sneak across the border, it makes it hard to enforce the border.
Those who enter the country illegally violate the law.
Ambassador de Mexico, hello, gracias, y también mi amigo.
Bienvenido a Miami. Last night, Jeb and I had some crabs.
We're not saying your democracy has to be like yours. I believe everybody desires to be free. But I also know people need to be convincing. Convinced. We got to convince people. Defeat this notion about our bullying concept of freedom. And when Americans learn to speak a language, learn to speak Arabic, those in the Arabic regional say, gosh, America's interested in us. They care enough to learn how we speak.
I still think Russia understands that it's in her interest to be West.
It was not always a given that the United States and America would have a close relationship.
Too much poppy cultivation in Afghanistan. Got to work together to eradicate poppy. The country is quite famous for growing pomegranates.
Yes.
Or honeydew melons. The United States is India's largest trading partner. The United States is looking forward to eating Indian mangoes.
It's in the Gulf Coast country's interest that there be a stable Iran. Iran that is capable of rejecting Iranian influence.
We grow pretty good crops and grow good beef. China has recently read the book on Mao. Make a useful tool of foreign policy for our country. Just try to let the sun shine in.
What a fantastic visit I had to Georgia. One fantastic folk dancing we saw.
Fantastic trip. Made fantastic because my friend was a fantastic host.
I can remember people hollering for trailers.
Let me just say, we felt your pain.
Making progress. We put cruise ships out. Over 1 million people. Scattered.
Some wag one time quipped, it's like watching people make sausage.
It's an amazing period in our history when you think about it. There's going to be a building boom down here. It's going to be an exciting time for people. But you're going to have yourself a building boom. You watch. It's a fantastic opportunity. People in faraway places like Washington, D.C. still hear you. The answer to electricity is sooner the better. It's hot over there.
There's hope. If I were a young entrepreneur, it would be an exciting place to go. There is a lot of money, and there's more money to come to help this part of the world.
Make sure this part of the world rebounds, and there's a lot of federal employees in this part of the world.
Governments don't love. Governments can dispense law and justice, but not love.
Out of the harm that came, convert this into a better life. It's like there's a great capacity to absorb hurt. I can remember coming here the times I came and looked hard in people's eyes and saw desperation. It's good to be able to look in people's eyes and not see them all bloodshot. There's a little bounce in people's step. The eyes have cleared up. So that's why I'm here, to say to people from around this part of the world and those who may be watching over the airways, this is a good deal. It's amazing what you can find in the rubbish. Now we got to do smart things.
The globe is warming.
You know, we live in a global world, and that creates uncertainty in some. I understand that.
You'll be able to see a technology that will enable you to converse with somebody on long distance, and it seems like the person's right there in the room with you.
Battery technologies that will enable you to drive a plug-in hybrid battery. The dream in solar energy is to develop technology so that someday your house is like a little generating plant. It's possible to capture the sun, feed it into your house. I think that's a pretty interesting idea. And there are places in this world where there's a lot of natural gas. A lot.
To use research dollars, your dollars, for research and development to figure out ways to burn corn.
There are limits to how much corn can be used for ethanol. I mean, after all, we got to eat some, and the animals have got to eat, and ethanol is good for drivers. Ethanol is homegrown.
Well, I'm feeling pretty healthy. You don't know when you're going to have to start taking prescription drugs.
We saw the analysis of a parabola curve.
Envision a card that it can be swiped across a reading device that facilitates the movement of people.
You know, LASIK surgery is an interesting, it's interesting to think about.
Micro drive storage and electrochemistry and signal compression.
Did I say those words?
Just getting into my peroration. Many of the health savings accounts owners are folks with a high school degree. People are plenty smart.
If you're a son or a daughter and your mom or dad is eligible for Medicare and he or she hasn't signed up, I believe the son or a daughter has a duty to help the mom or dad understand what's available. That's called love.
We need to make sure we connect the patient-doctor relationship to embedded programs like health savings accounts.
That's long word talk for if you get sick above a certain amount, your insurance pays for it. If not, you pay for it, but the savings, tax-free. If that's not clear enough, they'll help clear it up for me.
I have authorized a terrorist surveillance program to aggressively pursue the international communications of suspected al-Qaeda operatives and affiliates to and from America.
The FISA law was written in 1978. We're having a discussion in 2006. It's like saying, you know, you're breaking the law. I'm not.
This is a town of where a lot of people leak.
I don't know who leaked the information, for starters. You hear all kinds of rumors. Look, I want to know. I want to know if anybody's got any information who leaked. They ought to take it to the Justice Department so we can find out the leaker. Just we want to make sure we're extra secret about this deal.
Mine's the final decision. The decision was made.
It's really hard to be making rational decisions.
And so when you see me make decisions, it's coming from a basic set of beliefs. And that's what a decision maker ought to do. The decision maker ought to make decisions, tough decisions.
You know, if you don't have a PhD, you shouldn't be allowed to decide things.
Don't make decisions on polls. Much of my decision was affected by an event.
Difficult decisions.
You need presidents who make decisions based upon sound principle. People may not agree with the decisions. Those of you who didn't agree, at least know I'm making my decisions based on something I believe deep in my soul.
So we decided, you know, to renovate.
Decisions of war and peace, decisions of security, decisions of trade.
The decisions that we make affect, you know, lives.
I don't appreciate the speculation about Don Rumsfeld. He's doing a fine job. I strongly support him. Rumsfeld is doing a fine job. I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
I am making a change at the Secretary of Defense to bring a fresh perspective as to how to achieve something I think most Americans want, which is a victory.
What's changed today is the election's over, and the Democrats won. I have been talking with Don Rumsfeld over a period of time about fresh perspective. He likes to call it fresh eyes.
You mean, when do I hope to announce the strategy? Is that what you're talking about?
This is important. Very important report. It's a very considerate, important report.
and a very important part of our working to a new way forward, figuring out ways to go forward.
And that the way forward is a way forward to achieve our objective, to succeed.
So how to go forward. New way forward in Iraq. I discussed the way forward in Iraq, to analyze the way forward.
I believe that it's very important for people to listen. I hear voices of discontent. I hear the voices. I listen to all voices. And I listen a lot. I got a pretty good antenna. Actually, I thought we were going to do fine. Shows what I know. It was a thumping.
The beginning of a series of meetings we'll have over the next couple of years, all aimed at solving problems and leading the country.
I'm going to work hard. I'm going to sprint to the finish. All right, I got to go to work.
I will not inflict that on you again, but you just had to hear it. You just had to hear it. Quick break here. We'll be back. I'm Mike Mulway.
Come from overseas, so I can't. We make the pie.
It's about 7 before the hour. Thanks to our most efficient and excellent engineering staff in Phoenix, Ian Huff, Steve Blodgett, Billy Foster, all working tonight to make sure this program gets firmly burrowed into your ears. Also thanks to our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota, Mark Marshall, our webmaster, the moderators at MikeMulley.com, Ben Birch, White Rose Society, who archives the program, Catherine Bay is our executive producer. And also, once again, welcome back to AM 940 WINZ in Miami, who now carries this program. Thanks to the staff and management there, and also the folks in Miami who tune in. We do appreciate it. Let's see if we can squeeze in some more calls here. BJ is calling from Lake Havasu, Arizona. Hey, BJ.
Hi, Mike.
Uh-oh, we got an awful echo here. Are you on a cell phone?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
What?
Is that better?
No. Damn it. I'm sorry, BJ. Let me move on. I want to hear from you, but when you folks call, if you can, you got to do it from a landline. Sarge is calling from Mississippi. Hey, Sarge.
Hey, how are you doing, Mike? Thank you for giving Jim that time.
Sarge, are you on a cell phone?
No, I'm on my regular phone.
Okay, what's going on?
Okay, thank you for giving Jim that time.
Is Sarge there?
And people can
Sarge?
Go to...
Sarge, yes. We got a problem.
Yeah, I see that.
I'm going to have to talk to you tomorrow evening. There's something wrong with the phone system here. Sorry, Sarge. I appreciate you checking in. Let's try one more. David is calling from Nevada. David?
Yeah.
Are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
David?
Yes.
All right. Let's move on. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm not sure what's going on with the phone calls here, but the people we did get on, BJ and Sarge, y'all sound like you're deep inside a huge tin can. And that's a no-no. Pat Robertson said today that God tells him that a terrorist attack on the United States is going to cause a mass killing late in 2007. Robertson said God took him aside and told him about the impending tragedy during a recent prayer retreat. God told Pat Robertson also that major cities and possibly millions of people would be affected by the attack, which will take place sometime after September. And, you know, God also told Pat Robertson in January 2006 that he, Yahweh, had punished Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon with the stroke because Sharon had ceded some Israeli-controlled land to the Palestinians. You know, I just have a question. Is there nobody around Pat Robertson who can have this sick old bastard committed? I mean, who listens to this program anymore? Who listens to the 700 Club snot drivel? Who listens to that?
Is this the same guy who was trying to pray Hugo Chavez into hell? Or no, he was going to organize a death squad?
A hit squad.
Yeah.
A real man of God. A real man of God. All right, Truth Seekers. I'm sorry about the phone screw-up right here at the end of the program. We'll have it fixed. Promise. We'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network.